art, culture, politics, activism. Now, art in the pandemic age. Have you ever wondered why artists do what they do? What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm your host, Kyle Roman. Welcome to Artivism Now. Artivism, defined, is a portmanteau word combining art and activism. How is it that artists push the boundary of their medium? How do they move societies forward? How do they resolve issues in their neighborhoods, both local and worldwide? These questions are what we set out to answer by interviewing artists locally and the world over. We will get answers to those questions that artists put out there in the community. Today's artist profile is Cielo Stibor. Based in Brentwood, California, singer-songwriter, Cielo brings passion to her medium and serves many in the local community. She also happens to be an international music star. You can find her on her website, cielo.com, or Cielo Stibor on any social media. All right, welcome, Cielo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. And you are a musician that is based in Brentwood, California. You're okay if I say that, right?
Yes, of course. I am, you know. I still like to say San Francisco, but, you know. Yeah, okay. No, I am in Brentwood. It's been a decade that I've been in Brentwood. That's actually very crazy for me because I still feel like I'm not from here sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it's being based locally as well, like you, it's difficult for me to think of myself as being based or from here, but we met out here, so that's cool, right?
And there's so really things about the community too, you know, it's like,
yeah. Well, and your work speaks for itself as well as a musician. You're someone who always is talking about and or singing about writing music about, you know, some sort of change or, you know, using your medium as an activist kind of platform. So what is it that, well, first off, describe the work that you do and how would you quantify it as activist in nature?
Oh, that's a deep question. Well, nowadays, as you said, I'm a singer-songwriter. That's what I do first and foremost. My husband and I have, I don't like to call it a business because it really isn't a business, but we have a songwriting collaboration, you know, yeah. Collaboration, I guess that's the right word, you know. Yeah. And I write two types of music. One, like you say, that I try to incorporate my ideals, right? What I feel that needs to be heard, right? But I also do write commercial music, and I think that both of them can coexist. You know, a lot of purists will say, "Well, no, you know, you have to just, you know, be in one lane," and that's not true. As long as you stay true to yourself, that's fine, right? I think that. Yeah. You can do both. And I'm also a vocal director and I work primarily with kids and youth. And mm-hmm. that is my passion. And I've been doing that. It's funny because I actually have been doing that since my teens, you know. And back then, you know, when I was with kids, you know, I thought they were so much younger than me. And now, you know, I have kids that I've worked with back when I was a teenager. Now, you know, they're like my best friends. But I work with kids, and I guess when you tell me to describe the work that I do, more than just teaching them, you know, the right notes or teaching them harmonies, I teach them to be open to the world with music. And I know that makes sense to you, Kyle, because I work with many kids from Latin America who have been, you know, put in a certain box and put in a certain category, and unfortunately not taught to, they're not taught to dream, you know? So I believe that music does that for them. And I like to think that I open up possibilities in themselves with music, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a career path in music, but I believe it's going to help.
Yeah. And what you describe actually is where we both met, right? We met at the church that you do your work in, and in your ministry, in your music ministry. And that's where this friendship started. And I think it's really cool because we've always connected on the fact that there should be a little bit more in the art form than just performance or presentation of a performance. There should be something that's kind of like a backbone, like a message, you know, and we're very lucky to be part of a community that kind of thinks that same way.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the things that I really was very pleasant. I was very pleasantly surprised with this community, how important art mm-hmm. is, you know, to this community, and how much people like you, you know, put their passion in it. It's not just as a job, but as a true calling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And in terms of being an activist, you know, that term is thrown around a lot. Anybody could be an activist for anything, basically. Yeah. But in terms of activism, social justice movements, what do you think the role is of your particular art form within movements of social justice?
So one of my deepest, and I'm not going to call it a passion because it's more of my deepest concerns, right, is the rights of immigrants and refugees, mm-hmm. right? And the way we've been able to use it, I say we because it's a full community of musicians, use music is to raise awareness, you know, and also kind of try to make people understand that we're all in this together. I know that sounds kind of, you know, kind of cliche, right? But I believe that music is a gentle way of creating awareness with people that probably have the wrong idea and have complete misinformation, you know, or are scared, you know, and bringing about that, well, you know, you were talking about our community, St. Anne, you know, we have this incredibly open-minded pastor, right, who really believes in bringing the cultures together, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, assimilate or, you know, anything like that, but it's more to teach each other about each other, right, you know, because once you get to know somebody or something or a culture, then you're not afraid anymore, right? So then, you know, those questions or those fears that you have, you know, begin to be answered, right? Mm-hmm. And so with music, you know, we've been able to do that in different ways. I mean, by creating, you know, having multicultural events where you know, both of the communities come together, right? But also, and within those events, you know, talking about our immigration forums that we have at this, you know, same place, and or open discussions. I don't know if you remember a few years ago when Father Ron brought a Muslim imam to come and talk to people, you know, and to just meet him, and there were people, you know, from the community that were Muslim that were happy to just, you know, be there and talk, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the same with our immigration forums. It's like, you know, instead of being angry, come and ask questions, you know, it's like, we'd be happy to answer them. Right. And it all stems from music because, you know, we first have the events, right. And then we're able to, you know, to draw in that acceptance. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the main point of what you're bringing up is the importance of having dialogue, you know, having two-way conversations as opposed to one-way shouting or, you know, even one-way just like not even showing up, more of like gatherings as the focal point with music as kind of like the bridge.
And it really is a bridge. you know, because I have you noticed that people tend to listen, you know, I mean, if you hear a certain melody, then it catches you, right? And then immediately you're going to be drawn to the words. Mm-hmm. And that happens with everything. A couple of years back, I did a play. It was called Mujeres de Arena. Mm-hmm. And it was a play based on real letters written by mothers of women that were murdered in the city of Juarez, which has been, you know, I mean, this terrible situation where, you know, the killers have never been found. Women, I mean, there's been thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of women that have been killed, you know. Mm-hmm. So these letters exist. You can read them and they might not have the same impact as if you're saying it with music,
right?
Mm-hmm. So this play was really interesting because it was very, very deep and emotional, but you can see that everybody was hanging on every word because it was said with music, and it was nothing was changed. It was their words.
Yeah, and that's a amazing situation. The city of Juarez is, you know, one of those cities that people don't know, where the international economy literally descends upon that city, and that's where a lot of the manufacturing of goods happens, right? And so there's a lot of exploitation going on. So in a area where there's a lot of international exploitation going on, things like that, adherence to the norms of resolving crimes, it's just simply not gonna happen. Like it would in an area that's not being exploited economically.
Well, and also because the women that are being killed are deemed indispensable, you know, I mean, or dispensable, sorry, my Spanish is in my brain right now. Because, you know, it's mostly women who work at the maquilas. So maquilas are the places where they manufacture mostly clothing and different goods, like you say. It's, of course, they're people with, you know, it's the poor. It's women that probably have come from other states, you know, to work. And yeah, I mean, there's no response from the government. I mean, there are some international organizations that have gone and tried to resolve, but the bureaucracy, and it's just a really, really terrible situation, you know? And a lot of people, like you said, don't know, you know? A lot of times we aren't aware of what happens, you know, around our own, you know, daily lives. And it's usually, I think that, you know, and many times musicians are the ones who bring the awareness, you know, because when you hear it in song, I think you hear it clear.
I couldn't agree more. And it all you have to do in terms of the medium of music is go back to the United States of America, 1960s, right? Lot of the Bob Dylan era activism, like literal direct activism. I mean, even like Marvin Gaye, a ton of musicians put that at the forefront of, we're going to actually use our medium on the commercial end, like you talked about earlier, to bring about change in terms of the how people approach the issue of the Vietnam War at the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's my favorite part of music history. Is the 60s, definitely. Yeah, I grew up in Mexico, but we had, it's really interesting because the high school that I went to, we had a teacher who was a Marxist, you know, that was his thing, you know, but
he, like him already.
He was a cool guy. And he actually taught us, because when you're growing up in Mexico, you don't like it. Everybody listened to music in English, like that's what you did, right? It's not like just, you know, people over there, especially from the city, because that's where I grew up in Guadalajara, which is a huge city. Mm-hmm. It's like we were all into American rock, right? Mm-hmm. Or English rock or anything in English. But this teacher, Josue was his name, he taught us folk, you know, so he half an hour would just be listening to music. So, I mean, I remember there was a whole week that all we did was listen to Cat Stevens for some reason. I don't know. Yeah. And then, you know, Bob Marley, yeah. That was like his favorite, and Dylan, you know, and, gosh, I'm trying to remember, but it's funny because a lot of people say that, you know, I sound like a folk artist, but it's probably that influence, you know? Mm-hmm.
No, but. Yeah, and Cat Stevens, you bring up that artist, one of my favorite songs, Peace Train, you know? And
right?
The lyrics to Peace Train, I'm still like, I listen to them and I'm like, okay, we're on our way. It looks really bad, but we're on our way. Like, let's do this, you know? Let's make it happen. The next generation, you know, let's make it happen. So, you had. Talked about your work earlier, or the main passion of your work is within the, both in the youth group that you work with, but also in terms of a specific issue, it's immigrant rights and refugee rights. So, what is it that you could, that you have worked on in the past and that you're working on, you know, possibly in the future that relates to activism, within, those issues?
So in the past, I've always been involved in with that. One of my first jobs when I came from Mexico was I used to manage the day labor program. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, do you know what that is? So it's basically, the program that deals with day laborers in San Francisco. And that was a really, emotional job. I was really young, you know, but actually that's how I met most of my musician friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And back then, I also had a kids choir. That's what I was telling you. I was really young, you know. Rules were a little bit different. So I used to take them to protest and, you know, hop them all on a peach truck and yes, you know.
Love it.
And have them sing songs. And, you know, those are like some of my best memories, you know. So that was, you know, one of the first things that I really got involved in. Later, you know, my career started taking off. I had my band. I moved away. I lived in Spain many years. But believe it or not, living in Spain just opened my eyes to, you know, to the fact that the situation is like this everywhere, you know. You know, there's a lot of discrimination over there, you know, against the Moors. There's discrimination everywhere. And the one thing that I've always been very clear of, that it's just, we're misinformed, right? Right. And we are not open to dialogue, like you said, right? Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I started working. I had a private grant to work with inner city kids in San Francisco, because some of the people, you know, some of my musician friends and you know, we would get together and we talk about how there's not access to music for a lot of Latino kids, you know. Mm-hmm. First of all, because, you know, the money for private lessons and all of that doesn't exist. It's not considered a priority, right? Because, you know, they have to work, or, you know, they have to, you know, just
survival gets in the way, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we came up with this concept or this idea of recruiting professional seniors, right? Mm-hmm. That were, you know, musicians and would want to do this for free. So we had a pretty successful program in San Francisco, and it was kids from everywhere, you know. It wasn't just geared to Latino kids, but it started with that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty cool. I did that until I had to move to Brentwood, you know, and then of course the grant ran out. So when I came here, it was interesting because I didn't even know that Byron existed, right? You know, and I was kind of doing my thing. My kids were young and I was, you know, trying to focus on being a mom. Mm-hmm. And I met Sister Barbara, you know, Sister Barbara, right? Somebody told her about me. and she told me about St. Anne's, right? And I thought it was going to be, you know, that basically I was going to go back to the city when I needed to and just do, you know, projects that were close to my heart. I didn't imagine that I was going to be working here so full-heartedly, you know.
Right.
When I met the community, I started just with, I don't know if you know that, I started just with the Hispanic community, you know. And some of the middle, you know, I started just with the kids, and she said, you know, could you kind of do the something similar to what you used to do in San Francisco? I said, well, we can try, you know. Mm-hmm. But something really, really kind of moved me, because I met some of the kids, right? And some of them were in middle school. And we would talk, because I've had this thing that you always have to talk first. You can't just go delve into music, right?
Right.
Back when I was a kid and I had the, well, not a kid, when I was younger, and I had the group in the city, you know, we would have problem day, right?
Yeah.
I would grab my guitar and everybody would put their problem, a little piece of paper, and throw it in the guitar and would shake it up. And then we would just talk and, like, you know.
Yeah.
Talk about stuff, right? So I kind of did something similar over here, not like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And something really, really struck me, because one of the kids, a Latino girl, right? She was talking about middle school, you know. She was talking about how they had like a college fair or something like that, and the teacher started asking people what they wanted to do, you know. And also that they were gonna, you know, fill up some forms, and not forms, but just, you know, do kind of like a write-up of what they wanted to do in life. And I guess some other kid or kids told her, you know, well, why are you even filling that? You're just gonna be working in the fields. And that just plunged the, you know, a knife in my heart. And it kind of, I kind of didn't want to do it back then. And that kind of just said, okay, so there's work here to be done too, right? You know? So that really, really lit a fire. And I wasn't as mad as the kid who said that as I was mad at the parents, you know,
for sure,
that raised this kid to say that. And I'm like, man, so I guess we have work to be done here. Right. And that's when we started with them. And I think part of teaching, which, you know, right, so much, it's not only teaching them the content, right. Mm-hmm. It's really empowering them and making them see themselves like how we see them, right? Because right. All I see are like these powerful human beings that are going to rule the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so you know, I started working with the kids, and little by little started getting familiarized with different organizations here. Mm-hmm. And now, like I said, I'm lucky that Father Ron is super open, and we have these immigration forums, you know, we try to do them 2 to 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the panel discussions, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've done amazing things like, you know, like sponsor a family from Afghanistan, which is, mm-hmm. you know, which is pretty amazing. That has nothing to do with me or my music, but I just wanted to throw it out there. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
No, it's all great work, and it's like you said, in terms of teaching, and what you do a lot of is teaching, because like you said, out here there is work to do in certain areas, mm-hmm. which none of us we don't shy away from that. I think we're all kind of attracted to it. Actually, you know, living in a utopia to us sometimes would be, you know, we would have to find something else to do other than the work that we're all committed to, right? But I think you summed it up well, where we're trying to empower the existing goodness within the kids that's already there before someone else tries to chip away at it. You know, like, exactly. I kind of feel like sometimes societies and structural parts of our society kind of chip away at the really positive things that humans are born with. And the more that people like yourself and I can raise them up as early as possible, you know, we can help them to combat that with their own genuine goodness that is already there. We know it from birth, because I mean, how many times have you met, you know, a negative baby? Right?
No, never. Although never, my kids were a little nuts when they were babies, but
they might be nuts and everything, but they won't deny other babies access to human rights.
Yeah.
And also, I wanted to ask you about, because of our current situation, the quarantine, like, what opportunities do you think are there for artists in terms of activism during this situation?
So the beauty of social media, you know, like, social media can be cunning, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be used for, it's just like everything, right? It's kind of like, you know, our words can be used for good or for wrong,
It can be used to flip an election.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that creativity is flowing right now. I mean, because what else are we going to do, right?
But
write songs.
And
if you have the opportunity and you have a voice, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, do it. And it doesn't have, you know, I talk through music, but it could be mm-hmm. through the spoken word. It could be through mm-hmm. through your art. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that you have this opportunity to reach so many people, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised what people respond to. You know, I have a song. It was really interesting because, you know, our art is like our children, right? And we get really attached to them, right? And like I say, I write commercial music that I could kind of care less, you know, but I have music that is really near and dear to me. And there's one song that, you know, I didn't want, and it's not, I don't sell it, but I didn't want it out there because I, you know, it was mine. I was afraid it was going to be used for you know, not so good things, which actually, you know, it hasn't been. It's been on some shows that aren't the greatest. I think it's been like on Little Woman LA, which I find hilarious, you know, but
I love it.
I know, but it was the opening song for, you know, the series in Colombia, but that's not the important part. The important part is that it became really known, right? Mm-hmm. Out of the blue. So like now it has like a million views on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the lyrics are, I think, are powerful, right? And I never imagined that just by letting go and allowing myself to be vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. And allowing people to, you know, because sometimes we're afraid. I mean, our art is part of us, right? That it would bring meaning to so many people. So mm-hmm. I think that if you have something to share, you know, if you have a gift, you know, and especially if you can use it for good, you know, whatever it is that is good to you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, whether whichever cause you think, you know, needs to be open to the world, I mean, I think you should use it. And now, I mean, if you're not doing anything else, why not write? Why not paint? Why not, you know, create a play or you know, it's kind of, I think that's important, right?
Yeah, the time is now, right? If it
absolutely
if it ever
because
was time.
Then, you know, life's gonna be back, and you know, you're not gonna have the time, right? We were talking about that, right, Kyle? I mean, it's hard. I mean, we have to allow ourselves to also just be, you know, just be, right? But it is important to create. I mean, I'm slowly actually lost my mojo for a while, you know, because mm-hmm. life does that to you, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, because of our current situation, and because, again, you know, even with what is happening right now, there are people that are way worse off than us, right? And it's usually the marginalized, the people who are still out there working so we can have food on our table, you know. And we don't think that, so we actually have the luxury of being able to be home and create, you know. A lot of people don't, so. And we're healthy, which is what matters the most.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And one thing that's trying to that I'm trying to do is to capture the feelings and the dedication from people like yourself who are dealing with the quarantine from an artist's mindset. It could go either way. I mean, some days I'm super creative and have all these great ideas, and some days I'm just absolutely numb. And then the days start stacking up, and then you know, you're just kind of you're a victim to the time, and you're a victim to kind of you know, the lack of social contact, at least in person. But you know, there are people who are victims in much worse ways, and so maybe this is the focusing outwards on who's being taken advantage of and who is being you know, exploited, deemed essential. That's a key word nowadays.
So
maybe the focus should be outwards on them. I'm speaking for myself. I'm like dialoguing in my own mind right now. Like, okay, so like, you need to stop focusing on what is going on against you and focus on what's going on against other people, you know?
Well, and that kind of eases your worries and your stress too, right? Because I mean, we can think all we want about what's going on with us, but it can't change right now, you know? And yeah, that's interesting. And you know, creativity is one of those things that we can't force it, you know? We just have to let it, we have to surrender to it and just be open to it, you know?
Yeah, and you know, kind of, maybe that's a calibration that an artist could make right now as to how is it that I could start weaving together the context of what surrounds me, as opposed to trying to force that context, or you know, or even you know, create my own box or create my own framework of what I should be as an artist. Maybe I should just kind of listen for once, or you know. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and you know what, again, going back to, because you were talking about using the quarantine, you know, and the lack of social interaction. I mean, this is the time to reach out to other artists, right? I mean, collaborate. I mean, we have all these tools at our hands, you know, we have all this technology that, you know, didn't exist before. And we can do so many things together. I mean, I find myself collaborating with other musicians that I never would have dreamed of in, you know, in the corona-free world, you know.
Right.
And it's been really eye-opening for me, because, you know, we're always better together. And that's, you know, and that's one thing that when you talk about activism, right, it's like activism can never happen by yourself. And same with music. It's like, you're only, I mean, if you have a little tiny bit of talent, it grows exponentially when you meet other, you know, people like you, or even, you know, different than you, because then you learn a different perspective. That's one of the things that I've really grown to like about this present situation, just, you know, reaching out to people, because they don't have to live in your area, right? You know, make new friends. I mean, you know, ask people if they want to work with you, you know, and that's actually a really cool thing to do.
Yeah. I think that is, you know, something that I know personally in the theater world, the work that I do with kids, it's tough because I do have to kind of balance being that person in charge with including others. And I know the difficulty that bears upon someone who is in charge of something, and then also the creative person in charge, and then having to share sometimes with that. But any time that I've ever shared creative capability or creative responsibility with a student or another adult staff person, the work is always better. And so I think that's a great message kind of to leave with, is that now's the time to collaborate, you know, now's the time to connect, because we could really weave the strongest web of artists that has ever been seen with all this time that we have.
That is true. Well, I mean, And you know, another thing, because that's what, you know, tagging on to what you were saying, this, at least for me, you know, I mean, I've seen so many people just let their guard down, you know, and their ego, you know, I mean, for me, that's always been a huge enemy of creativity is ego, right? Because even though we're supposed to have a certain degree, if you're an artist, you have to, you know,
right.
But I think we just, we confuse it with just, you know, with our own self-confidence and with just our own ideals, because ego is a little bit different, you know. It's like when you let it go and you just, you know, you're open to other ideas and you're open to learning and open to collaboration, it's like beautiful things are made, you know.
Yeah, and letting go of that ego kind of, it could end up being the thing that makes your art go beyond what you ever dreamed it could go, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Good. Well, thank you for coming to talk with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle. All Sorry, right. I have to admit that yesterday was Mother's Day and my husband made some really nice mixed drinks. So I am a little off today. And when I drink, so I'm not drinking right now. I drank yesterday.
All right. So you had talked about working at a day labor program in San Francisco. How else could you describe the work and how your art medium lent itself to accomplishing what you guys tried to accomplish?
Got it. So, so that was my first job. You know, I was a teenager and I actually got the job by being recommended by another musician friend. And it was, for some reason, you know, a lot of artists were involved with this cause. I think that we have a certain sensibility, you know. But the reason why this was so important in my profession and in my, what later would become, you know, kind of like my passion, was it opened my eyes to what prejudice it is in general, right? Because I was coming from Mexico, right? But look at me, right? I was working there and we would have people come over protesting that, you know, the people that worked there didn't belong. Nobody told me I didn't belong, right? Because I looked the part, mm-hmm. you know, I was from Guadalajara. I didn't even grow up here, you know, right. I was born here, but people don't know that, right? I mean, I grew up in Guadalajara since the time I was 6 months old until, you know, after I finished high school. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge eye-opener for me because people immediately accepted me because I looked the part, right? Mm-hmm. And so that really just, you know, just kind of gave me a nudge of what I was supposed to do, you know, and what route I was supposed to take. And like I said, even though after my music career took me elsewhere, that time of my life was very formative, right? Because everybody that I met within, you know, the circle of musicians, I mean, they, you know, we were with the same mindset, right? So every fundraiser that we would do, every protest that we would attend, you know, or rally or anything was, you know, we built it with music and music was a part of it all, right? So yeah, and that was my early years. And then later in the city, I mean, sorry. What was your next question? Sorry, you can cut that, right?
No, it's okay.
All right. So what else were you gonna say?
That's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so you can cut it before, right?
All right, so you wanted to talk about a success story from the day labor program, right?
Yeah, we had a lot of heartbreak too, you know, but we had some really cool success stories. Like there was one gentleman, I still remember his name. His name was Cirilo Flores, right? And you know what the day labor program is, right? We send him off for a day's work, mm-hmm. a day's worth of work, right? So Cirque du Soleil was in town and they needed dishwashers. And I don't even know how we found out, right? But we were able to send a few guys to go and help with the dishwashing. And I guess they had their own cafeteria. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how that worked, but mm-hmm. Cirilo Flores, and he was, you know, I mean, probably a man in his mid-50s, you know, he wasn't a young lad, right? Mm-hmm. And they loved him so much that they took him with them, gave him Canadian citizenship and took him with them, you know, with them on tour. And I would get postcards from like all these different places in the world from Cirilo Flores. And that story is like amazing, you know, because all he needed was a chance. He was a really hardworking guy, right? And, but it saddens me that, you know, Canada had to come and take him and, right. you know, for him to have citizenship and have, a dignified job. But it's one of the best stories that I remember from back then.
Yeah. Well, and you describing it kind of makes it sound like, oh, it could be that easy.
Exactly.
If we just approached that specific issue from a place of compassion or a place of second yeah. chance or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it could be someone's first chance. You never even know. But it shouldn't matter, because if someone's willing to step forward and work for a living, why not offer yeah. them that as, you know, some sort of reparation for whatever they've been through in the past?
I totally agree. You know, and it's funny because we think of people coming to look for a job as not being skilled. And that drives me crazy, you know, because everybody has something to offer, right? Mm-hmm. And refugees and immigrants come in many, you know, shapes and sizes and with different education statuses, right? And Cirilo was a really hard worker, you know, and just as everybody who works in the fields, who works in, you know, at restaurant kitchens, who, you know, who paints the walls, but that's what we tend to think of as immigrants, right? But, you know, we get a lot of people that come here wanting to find a better life or being, you know, or being politically persecuted mm-hmm. who are highly educated, right? And absolutely. They fall in the same category that, you know, either how they look or this fear that, you know, that sometimes we have of the other, right? I mean, I remember we had one gentleman who came because his family was being persecuted in Mexico, and he was actually a journalist, and he had to come and, you know, with everybody go, you know, go put sheetrock in and go work at, you know, wherever we, those day labor, I mean, wherever the day work would take us, right? And never, you know, he had like, I think, you know, a double master's in language in Mexico, right? But and he tried to find work as a journalist or as a writer, and you know, no doors were open. But so he created his own, which was really cool, you know. And that was something that was really neat, because as he started to become successful and was able to fix his immigration status, he took a whole bunch of people to work for him. And he, but during the time that he was in the day labor program, he was teaching, you know, other people how to read or how to spell. Cause you know, sometimes, yeah. sometimes like we would have people that came from a small village in Guatemala who never got a chance to go to school, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those kind of anecdotes or those little stories, you know, mm-hmm. were really cool, you know, to see. And it really shaped the way I saw this new world I was living in. You know?
Well, and also the way you explained it, how the gentleman who was a journalist would come back and provide work for other people. I mean, you want to talk about economic stimulus right there. That's a program literally from the ground up that yeah. can be sustainable and can provide opportunities in every line of work, like you had stated, from manual labor all the way to something that's as academic as journalism.
Can you imagine if we all did that?
Right. Yeah, if we all just maybe remembered someone who gave us a chance and then provided opportunities for others. Absolutely. I couldn't, I couldn't say it any better, because that's what allows us to not only feed our own souls, but sustain communities around us, and everybody wants to live in a safe and sustainable community. I don't think there's anyone who walks around on the streets that's like, oh man, I really wish it was more violent here, you know, like no one's out there saying that. So when something like this has direct effect, positive effect in the community.
Well, and everybody has a right to try to find that safe environment for them and their family, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think that as humans, we have that human right, you know, mm-hmm. to find where we're going to be safe and where we're going to be able to provide for our family.
Absolutely. So like it's just kind of goes back to, you know, how is it that we can, both as artists and members of a community, how can we use the tools that we have to do what we do and gain the recognition and or the feelings from creating something while at the same time providing a safer environment for our community and our community members. Like, to me, that's like the existential question that artists are faced with right now. What can we do to make the world better through our art medium? And there's infinite examples of how in the past it's happened. So it just takes another pledge, another nudge within ourselves to kind of make it happen again.
Well, and I feel that after all this is over, you know, our world isn't going to be the same, right? So, I mean, I'm hoping that a lot of artists are using this time, you know, to contemplate, right? You know, to contemplate their creativity and their art to see, you know, how it could be used for this new future that we have. I mean, we don't know. It's like, we don't know when live music is going to happen again, you know, which directly affects, you know, my world and especially my husband's world, right? We don't know when, you know, we're going to be able to see a live play on stage, right? You know, so all of those questions, like what's going to happen? So how are we going to express all that, you know, angst that we have, and how are we going to use that to, you know, create a better place for this new now that we're going to be living, you know?
Right. Yeah. And hopefully everyone's going to take necessary steps to make those things happen so that we can all create something that is worthy of the people that we serve, because we know that everybody is worthy of that service. So, well, thank you again for answering all these questions.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right. Wonderful. So we'll see you soon, okay?
All right.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of Artivism Now. I'm your host, Kyle Roman, signing off. Thank you for supporting us. Click on Twitter at Artivism Now. Check me out on Instagram at The Right Life, WriteLyfe. And hopefully we can get this thing going. This is a new project. We want to enlist some more artists. We want to profile artists who are doing great things in their communities. So wherever you are, let that art flow, let it mean something, and goodbye.